This is Marine Antiviristat Sergeant John T. McDaniel, stationed at Marine Corps Base Headquarters Building 1160, G3, in room 224, Camp Pendleton, California. Today for interview, we have Marine First Lieutenant Carl L. Haynes, service number 0103553. Assigned as Executive Officer, Charlie Company, 5th Military Police Battalion, 5th Marine Division, Camp Pendleton. Lieutenant Haynes was in Vietnam from December the 9th, 1967 to December the 28th, 1968, and was Platoon Commander, 1st Platoon, Golf Company, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines, 1st Marine Division. Lieutenant Haynes, tell us about your experiences while you were in Vietnam.
Well, I joined my unit in Vietnam about the 9th of December, and immediately we went to Quang Tri, where 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines was located at that time, prior to going to Con Tien. And they were almost TO on officers when I got there, so I had a weapons platoon and had a very short time to train them. We had just about 3-4 days to train before we went to Con Tien. 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines was OPCON to the 3rd Division, and we drew the roll to go to Con Tien to relieve some of their units up there at that time. So, like I said, we had a very short time to train and all, very short time to get to know my troops. But on the whole, the troops were real enthusiastic. They were real hard chargers. They were pretty proficient in their training on their specific weapons. They'd been to the weapons training schools back here, and they knew what was going on, and they were real eager to please. I was real impressed. I think, on my own part, I could have used a little more preparation in the weapons end of training and functioning as a weapons platoon commander. It wasn't what I'd really expected as a brand new second lieutenant. And but the staff NCOs we had were outstanding. They helped me along, really showed me what was going on, and got me so I could actually feel I could function in the role of a more senior lieutenant or a junior captain usually fills this billet. So we got to Con Tien and pulled various search and destroy operations, and we were real successful. And I think in part it was due to the training our weapons people had. We found the 60 mortar and the M60 machine gun to be real effective in counter ambush tactics and things like this. We functioned always with conventional tactics. The squads and the platoons always used conventional tactics. Companies used to travel 2 up, 1 back. The platoons usually adopted a wedge when they traveled, so it was a little different than what I'd expected. I kind of figured I'd be fighting more of a guerrilla-type warfare environment, traveling in column with flank security, but it was a complete turnaround. But I think it was a better experience for me to learn to function like this. We'd had the various classes in basic school to function on a conventional level, and it took a little getting used to. The troops had come from down south around Da Nang, and they'd been down there, and they'd been used to fighting guerrilla warfare, and they came up there, and we had quite a bit of trouble explaining to them how to function in a more spread out type maneuvering elements. Squads and platoons would be so spread out, and it was completely different. But as I was saying, troops took a while to get used to what they were doing and the new way of operating, but all through Vietnam I was really amazed at the enthusiasm these people have to do the job the way you want it done. The discipline is real good. That you tell them you want something, it's done. There's no questions asked. I was real impressed with that. So once we got to going, we started to pull quite a few operations around Khe Sanh and at Con Tien and later at Khe Sanh, various operations. And in all instances, the Marine rifleman was just outstanding. We had real good supporting arms, the artillery from the various fire bases around Con Tien and Khe Sanh were outstanding. We had good response. We'd call for fire and it was pretty accurate. But again, I have to go back to believing in the troops, because the FOs we had with them were usually corporals or maybe sergeants Very seldom did we ever see an artillery officer. I guess they're a rare commodity. And I don't think they could have done any better than what we had, though. I mean, these people could call artillery and drop it in your watch pocket if you wanted it. And in most cases, they did. We had a few incidents where artillery was, that we had called it, come in on us, but investigation shows it was due to the constant firing of the gun. Sometimes the gun would be off a little bit, things of this sort, and that's to be expected in any war-type situation. It just can't be helped. It's unfortunate, but it does go on. Medevacs, we got good support on our medevacs. I was real satisfied. I think the longest we ever waited for a medevac was 55 minutes, and that was because he couldn't get into the zone because it was too hot. And but they tell you they're coming to get you, they're coming. And I was real pleased with the support we got in all instances. Supply-wise, we were supported pretty well. They got the supplies to us when they could get them to us. Being on the move as much as we were, it was kind of hard to supply us in the field. And there's only so many helicopters you can utilize to supply not only us, but all the other battalions that were working up around the DMZ. So we always had enough to make out. They always thought we had food, we had our ammunition, so, but we always thought we could have a little more. And, but all in all, the support was real good. In regards to the M16, we never had any incidences where it would malfunction. The troops were given a lot of instruction while we were in the field on the weapon, how to clean it, how to keep it clean, how to correct any malfunctions that we could deal with. And we were real satisfied, got outstanding results from the weapon. And I think the thing on the M16 is that it's just a more sophisticated weapon than the troops have been used to dealing with. It's something, it's new when it came in. The manuals and the FMs came out on care and cleaning of the M16, but the Marine in Vietnam already, he didn't have a whole lot of time to familiarize himself with this weapon before he took it to the field. We, every chance we got, we were inspecting the rifles, the troops were cleaning them, and you just have to demand maybe a little higher standards on keeping this weapon clean because it is so sophisticated. But it's a weapon that's made for one purpose, close in fighting, and it puts out a tremendous volume of firepower, and it does a real outstanding job for the troops. All the troops we had just swore by it. There was none of this old controversy about it being a weapon that wouldn't function under situations of combat, and we were real satisfied with it. I think the whole thing is, in Vietnam, my experience was training. We were in various different engagements. We were Contien, we made a lot of contact with the NVA. We were at Kaesong, we made contact. We were at 881, we made contact, and up on 689. But the thing that impressed me, I think, about Vietnam was the quality of the, well, I had two different company commanders, and they both took the time to first teach their lieutenants. My first company commander was a Captain Copeland, and he told me, he says, "You've learned the basics." He says, "Now I've been here, well, let me teach you a little more." And they took the time to sit down and teach you little things about reading the map, functioning in the field, that made it all a lot easier for you to get around over there, and calling artillery. They can only teach you so much in school. Marine Corps schools are outstanding, but you have to get the practical experience. And here you have to rely on someone that's been there, and your staff NCOs, because they know what's going on. They've seen this, and they can tell you if you just listen. And so we were constantly, my first 4 or 5 months, kind of under criticism. The company commander would just do something wrong, and he would really get on us about it, which was good, because it's the only way you learn. I mean, it's not a place where you can afford to make a lot of mistakes, because they cost you over there. And we were taught, we made a mistake, we're going to get chewed out for us, but we were also going to get corrected and shown how to do it the right way. And I've been extremely grateful for this, that I've had two company commanders that would take the time to show me. And after they felt we had been pretty well squared away, they let us help work with the troops. We were working with our own troops every day, but they would teach us to finer points. Working with our troops, we would call in a squad at a time, and get the maps out and show them, say, now look, this is a map. Use this map, use this compass, orient your map, but rely more on the contour intervals of the ground. Get so you can take that map out and say, hey, I'm right here, I know where I'm at. No problem if I have to call fire. And every day we'd take our units out on patrols, usually company-sized patrols up there, and we'd stop the company managers and say, well, just walk over to one of your troops and say, hey, where are we at? And it puts him on the spot, which was real good, and he had to either know or tell you he did. And so after a while, we had a whole unit of not only squad leaders and fire team leaders that could read maps, but just about the whole platoon, just about the whole company, and they could all call fire. When we were at Contien, we worked out of the combat base itself, and we would go up to the various observation points, and the artillery people were more than glad to get these people in and teach them how to call fire and let them adjust it, and they could see it. And then we'd take them out in the field, and we'd let them call more fire, so they would really get proficient. And a lot of times, it was just going out on patrol. We weren't making contact. We'd pick out various objectives, targets, and let these troops call fire on the various things just to get the experience. So, like I say, training was a real big thing. Another thing is, I think over there, the higher-ranking officers pretty much tried to believe in the new lieutenant right out of school, tried to help him all they could, which is, I think, really what you need more than anything, someone to believe in you. You're a real hard charger out of basic school, but you have to get over there and learn the ropes, figure out what's going on, and have someone really trust in you that feels that you can do the job you've been sent there to do. And once you start believing in yourself, you make out pretty well. I think after the first big contact we had over there, Contien, we ran into a company-sized unit with a platoon, and my troops performed just beautiful, and I was a little surprised that I could actually function under such situations. You always have that doubt till the first time, and we made out real well. The training had paid off. We moved against three NVA machine guns, knocked out all three, and just about completely annihilated the NVA company, and we were real satisfied with the performance of the troops. The troops, I can't sing their praises high enough. They're outstanding. They're trained. They know what's going on. They know what they want to do. And all you have to do is help them out a little bit, show them. And like I've always said, if you'd ask them, they'd go to hell and put the fire out. After August 19th, our last big operation up in the DMZ, we were brought down to Da Nang. We worked about 8 miles from Marble Mountain. And I was given the job as S2 for the battalion. And I had 7 interpreters working for me. So I began to get involved in the combined action program, working along trying to help out the S5. And in my mind, I saw a lot of things that could use improvement. The biggest thing, the combined action units located in the villes out around where we were, they didn't seem to be getting the supervision and the training that they should have been getting. They were pretty much left to their own devices out there to do what they did, do what they wanted to do, come and go into Da Nang as they wanted and all this. And as such, I don't think they were spending that much time with the people trying to really push the program as it was set up by and pushed by General Wall. So kind of got down on the program itself. It may have been I just looked at an isolated instance, but every day we would see these two villages and the two CAP units around our area, and they just seemed to be wasting their time and the Vietnamese people. It seems as though you can work with them, you can reason with them, you can accomplish something, but it's so difficult, because they think completely reverse to what we think. They're after, in my mind's eye, their own personal benefit, which I can't blame them for that, because it's their country, They've been there a long time. They've been fighting this war for years, and they get tired, and they're out for personal gain, personal benefit. And I think we tend to look down on them because of this, where if we had someone in there, people really geared and trained to get in there and understand and push the civic action program all the time, we could really get a lot more benefits from this than we are getting at this time. Now, we pushed the VIP program, the funds program for ordnance and things of this type turned in, and we were real successful. We had more ordnance and booby traps pointed out, turned in down there while I was with 1st Division than any of the other battalions. And our philosophy was it was always better to pay for this ordnance, get it back, than to have some Marine get himself hurt out there in the field because the VC had got it. So we were real successful, and as we pushed the program, our incidents from mines and booby traps definitely went down. We actually had, especially the children, coming in, taking us out and showing us where the mines and the booby traps were planted. And so we were real satisfied with this, and it went along real well for quite a time. And then some young gentleman out there decided he could take the dead mortar rounds that were broken in half, fill them with sand, put them back together, and turn them into us. And they started trying this, figuring if they couldn't find enough one way, they'd bring them to us another. And we bought a few of these, but we figured it out real quick because we always had our ordnance turned in. It was always checked by EOD, and they brought this to our attention. But again, it's kind of they're out for personal gain. Their income and status level is real low, and they benefit themselves. But I worked, like I said, with 7 interpreters. I was invited to 2 of their weddings, things of this sort, and we got along real well. I think just because we tried to understand them, tried to see things their way. The Vietnamese people seem to really take it to heart if you'll go out and try to eat what they eat, do what they do, things of this sort. And I think we were real successful in this aspect of it. But I think that the entire CAP program should be looked at again. I think the basic concept is real good. I've read some about it and all. I think it's good, but I think they just need a little higher quality people in there. Tendency seems to be from the rifle units to, when the quotas for these CAP units come in to send, they're people that are causing them trouble just to get rid of them. And I know I've done it myself, because you just don't have the people over there at this time to turn your best squad leader and your platoon sergeant loose. I mean, you've got to have these people accomplish your mission too, so it's understandable. But if enough people could be trained in this program, I mean, not just the officers, but down to the lowest lance corporal, PFC, and private, so he can go out and push this program in the village and get people that are really enthusiastic about it and push it, it might just be successful. It might be what we need over there. I think the answer is through the children. You're going to have to reach the children and work through them as well as through the adults, because the adults have been so long thinking one way, maybe a little anti-American a lot of times. I think at times they actually resent us being there, but that's just my own personal opinion. And to the children, if you can educate them, show them that we have a good system of government, what we're trying to do for them is the right thing, and come up, it may take years, but I think that's going to be the end solution to actually winning in Vietnam, is when you get the young people, all the way from the little kids up to your college students and on up, thinking about what's going on and actually wanting to do something about it. I think more and more you're seeing this. You're seeing the Vietnamese government take a more active part day in, day out in the actual activities of the country, running the war, trying to function as a government. And see it displayed in the Paris peace talks. They're displaying a lot of nationalist spirit right now, and it's their country and they want to keep it. They don't want the communist forces in there telling them what to do. So I think we've come a long way, but I think we've got a long way to go before we've ever really accomplished our mission. And it's kind of hard to see the overall gain when you're there in Vietnam for 13 months. You come, and I'd say for the first 6 or 7 months, you operate fairly effectively. You do your job, you're real enthusiastic. And then you get over, might call it the hump, you're on your downhill slide, you're getting ready to go home. You start thinking more and more about this, you know. And so I think the tour has a lot to do with it. Don't get me wrong, I didn't want to stay any longer than my 13 months either. But I think this is one of the problems we have over there at this time. Well, I think that just about sums up my tour in Vietnam. I think it was a most rewarding experience. I was associated with a great number of really great people. I think it's the finest people you'll ever run into anywhere. And all I can really say is I was glad I got my chance to be there and to be with such a fine bunch of people.
Thank you, Lieutenant Haynes. This is Marine Engineer Staff Sergeant John T. McDaniel from Marine Corps Base Headquarters, Building 1160, G3, Room 224, Camp Pendleton, California. This interview complies with Marine Corps Order 5750.38.
call the rising sun, and it's been the ruin of many a poor boy, and God, I know I'm one. My mother was a tailored lord, she sewed my new blue jean. My daddy was a drunkard lord down in New Orleans. Well, our mother tell your children not to do what I to spend your life down in misery in the house of the rising sun. Well, the only thing a drunkard needs is a suitcase and a trunk, and the only time that he's satisfied is when he's on the drunk. The news.